great work they're doing on the salt stone disposal vaults and how they've made these mega vault concepts to really cut the cost there, and some of the progress is impressive. I see it every day driving past. it's a good work going there. So we talk about our process. We talked about 83%. So where are we in terms of safety, in terms of throughput, availability? What are we doing? Safety, we're in a great spot. The department deserves a lot of credit on this project versus some of the things out west where they really put an investment in full-scale testing of the technology. If you follow the Hanford Waste Treatment Plant and the issues that the Defense Board, my former employer, had with that really bollocks that up, is that the department really put their money where their mouth is here. And I think we did a very good job executing that program. We did if you look at this is our air pulse agitator test rig. Everything in the dark cells has fluidic mixing, so you don't have moving mechanical parts in radiolytic areas. We have a little easier problem than the guys out west from 5 weight percent solids and so forth, but we've done full-scale testing both at our Pasco facility and then down at Aiken, and we're able to close with the Defense Board all the mixing issues, all the process issues from a safety standpoint there, and they formally did that in the December 2013 report to Congress. We have Dr. Mikowski here from SRNL. They've been a great partner to work with ever since their roots at SRTC with regards to real operational solutions. They helped us with some rheology measurements with regards to classifying and quantifying the waste to get to that closure point, and that was much appreciated. Specifically, Dr. Sam Fink was really excellent in support with us. With regards to availability, now we know the processes work, but what about making sure we've got redundancy in the process so we're not, falling down every time there's a hiccup? What kind of redundancy, availability? That's where we've really had a benefit of our technologies. They're bi-monthly now. They used to be more frequent with our partners on site that are running the pilot plant. So in addition to the full-scale testing that we've done, we have the benefit of a hot pilot plant that's actually about a 6-scale throughput, maybe less once we get up to the next generation solvent opportunities if we get there. But to benefit from that, we've had these technology exchanges where some of the testing we've had has gone towards them to improve their operations, and some of the things that they've identified we've put into our design. There's numerous. I picked three just as an example. When the strip effluent is once you've concentrated, you've removed the cesium, you have a concentrated stream getting ready to send to DWPF. At their plant, they had just a head, just gravity feed through a coalescer to get any residual organics out of that stream. And that was blocking up, and so it was causing time to go down. So we ended up taking lessons learned there, putting an actual physical pump in so that we could put physical head on that and drive the system all the way to a planned outage and said, hey, can I have to take a unplanned outage to go clean the coalescers or so forth. There was another event on their small unit where they had gotten some organic into the hold tank that goes on to DWPF, so that strip concentrated material. You don't want to send organics with that because of safety basis reasons, flammable gas, that sort of thing. And they got a bigger chunk of organics in there than they planned. That was a small enough tank that they had a JCO they could feed and bleed it on a DWPF. But when we saw that, we took a look and I challenged my engineer and said, okay, what happens if that happens to us? It was, oh, that can't happen to us. We got all these other different designs and it's much less likely. That's all true. It is much less likely to happen in our plant. I said, but okay, what if it did? I didn't get as good an answer there. And so we finally said, well, what can you guys do? Take a look. What can you do that if that did happen? I understand it's less likely, but what do you do to recover? And the first answers were, expensive, timely, painful. And finally, one guy came up and said, if we run one line, maybe 100 feet of pipe with a pump, we could actually recycle this back to the contactors. And instead of a months-long recovery, it could be a days-long recovery. So we put that in, and we're much better off for it. Also, they found that they got some cesium migration just into the headers, the ventilation headers coming off these systems, and so we put flush capability in there so that we can have much more efficient maintenance evolutions and as well as reasonable achievable, keep the radiation fields down, not as much temporary shielding. So those are just some of the examples of what the benefit we've gotten out of our interactive exchange and design knowledge. Now with regard to throughput on the plant, Pam had mentioned it's a 6 to 8 nominal throughput facility. And on the decontamination factor, the 40,000 is what the design requirement decontamination factor. Even our baseline solvent is up in the over a million. When you start looking at next generation solvent, I'll talk a million, you're teasing with a billion. So, I guess you're 99.9 or 99.99999, is there an appreciable difference? Well, it's less curious, so all the better. We first started out with the 6 million. That was our contactors were rated at about 30 gallons per minute of both aqueous and organic coming through. And we had never, maybe up to 6 years ago, got them to run at 100% capacity. We could really run them stably at 75% capacity. And then in one of our, not penultimate, the one before penultimate run, we were able to get 100% of the throughput through, and that got where we could show we could sprint and run these things at 9 million gallons per year, up from 6. Very, very happy with that. That was being able to get to 100% of rated contactor flow. So we really feel good about that. So that was kind of maxing out with what the basic Bob Kalix solvent was. Now, I give the department a lot of credit here, too, because we stepped forward to them and said, hey, you know, some of the best kind of improvements are those that you can use to leverage existing equipment because they're very cost effective. And the partners at ORNL, SRNL had done a lot of work developing a enhanced extracted molecule that uses the same equipment, same, you know, isopar diluent and so forth, to be able to, and they said, hey, we think this could let you run, you know, 30 gallons per minute that go through the contactors. If you can run less solvent and get the same decontamination, that means proportionally that much more waste. And it was about a 30% increase. So the department put their money where their mouth was, and they funded a full-scale test program for next generation solvent to see what we could stably achieve and do. And we were able to show demonstrated potential, the hydraulic capacities of next generation solvent up to 12 million gallons a year in our plant. Now there's to be careful, you've got to make sure you can feed at that rate and take out at that rate, and there's some other things in the plant you got to make sure dial in, so they're not throwing, you know, absolute promises in the air, but very high confidence that with that next generation solvent you can get to 12 million. There's some minor capital investments to put a couple of additional boric acid tanks in a Butler building and pumps, but they tie in cold. We're working with Pam and her team. We finished an alternatives analysis again, working with the site from an integrated standpoint, and have kind of come up with, here's the preferred design alternative. We're just in the process now working with Pam about coming up with conceptual design in some manner to get that in place. And I think it's a matter of when and not if, but that's still being worked to a degree. But in any event, going to 12 million gallons of potential there, or leveraging your billion-dollar plus investment with maybe a $10, $20 million investment to almost double the throughput is a pretty nice performance by the department and their support contractors. Again, I did keep talking to the department. We had a lady there, Pat Suggs, who was really badgering me. Tom, well, if the next race often gets you to 12, you know, what if we could feed at higher concentration? That would mean possibly less blending, and that would mean less waste on the other side to have to go into grout vaults. You know, and I said, well, let's do one thing at a time. Let's do the NGS first. So we finally talked through that and convinced ourselves that the funding was there, so we ran at higher concentration instead of running. When Pam was talking about when you have to dissolve the salt, there's 37 million gallons in the tanks now, but it exists in various form: solid salt cake, high concentration salt, low concentration salt. When you dissolve that into the currency at 6.4 molar that we have to process, that 37 million turns into approximately 100 million. So if we were able to run at, instead of 5.6 molars through the contactor, at 7, let's say, then that could mean that you only have to process, you know, 80, 75 or so. So your effective throughput at the higher concentration could possibly even get you to 15 plus. Now, once you get to 15, you got to start looking at other aspects of the plant. Like, do I put a 500 horsepower engine and a skateboard, make sure that you're not, you know, having other limiting constraints that pop up, which I don't think we do, but, you know, those are the kind of things that are on the horizon. And that was a very excellent approach. And actually, our partners out at SRR have implemented next generation solvent in the ARP MCU and have been showing excellent results in terms of decontamination factor and so forth. So it's very promising. It's a pleasure to have the ability to test things full scale in a cold environment and then have your partners prove it out, at least in the pilot scale hot chemistry. And that's a shameless promotion of our partner's plant there. That's the, you know, ours have this beautiful welded stainless steel slopes, and they got, you know, hoses, but this one's working right now, so give them their due. Here's a picture just of the 3D model with the concrete, you know, the 3 foot, 2 foot concrete walls pulled out, and you can see this just to give you an idea of the scope of these, those center tanks down the middle are, there's six 30,000 gallon roughly stainless steel tanks with internal air pulse agitator, big turkey baster jets and so forth. These tanks on the outside to the corner here are the second strike out of tanks, and it's just our cold, the chemicals, you know, feed chemicals in the facility. The actual contactor, that centrifugal contact tanks, is here. We've got in the order of 23 miles of small bore stainless steel pipe, which, if any of you are familiar with welding, small bore stainless steel welding is about as challenging under B-33 as you're going to get. And we have about 83,000 welds to do. I think we've done about 76-ish, 75-ish thousand of those welds, and we're about 90% through. So with that, so you're really looking at a pretty complex animal. The beauty from a safety standpoint is this operates at less rigorous temperatures and pressures than your wash machine. Where at ambient temperature and pressure very much helps with the safety analysis and making those things much more easy to defend. It's an interesting plan. From a visual standpoint, from construction progress, we started the base, got finished with the base mat installed in August 2009. You can kind of see how this has progressed. To where it is today with the exterior fully enclosed, and now we're really getting the mechanical walk down. We've got a lot of leg up on the electrical and terminations, but that's what's ongoing. Hydros and flushing, you know, that's a big piece that's going to be critical path for us right now. I'll note up in the top corner, one of the challenges is Steve was talking about suppliers and supply chain, that we've been no stranger to supply chain issues by any stretch. Those large ASME vessels really have taken us for a loop. We had one vendor that we were 6 months away from delivery of, which is basically a two-year lead time item that failed open, and we had to go to a new vendor and restart that whole procurement. I was very proud of the engineering construction groups and our staff that we actually, originally the plant was designed to build the base mat, build the walls to 116, put the tanks in, build the deck, and build around them. Because those tanks were delayed by 2 years, we had to rewicker the entire construction sequence and build the entire plant minus the tanks, leaving decks and capability to put in later. And that tank coming in over the top is a 21-foot diameter tank, and we had a 23-foot pole to plop that thing down and set it. But we were able to successfully do that and move on with life. And that costs some money. But again, the department has stayed with us, and we've been on a good track now after taking that body blow from a supply chain issue, and are well on our way to success. There's this artist rendition of the facility. It's got some, you know, items. The base mat's 8 feet thick. That was one of our negotiations with our defense board friends. I could have debated until I was blue in the face whether it should have been 4 or 5, but I said, hey, if I make it 8, will you stop arguing? We said, yep, that's great. So you know, I view it in terms of, some might say you wasted $2 million. I view it as we were spending $12 million a month. I could have argued for a year, so I saved, you know, $120 minus $2 million. That's the way I like to look at it, at least. One thing I have to say here as far as the challenge is that although the process is well vetted out and very solid, we've built a lot of flexibility in the plant. There's lots of valves, lots of different arrangements. So the testing and commissioning phase, just anything that has on the order of 4,500 valves, that's just a lot of things to mechanically check out and work through. And we're in the process. We have about 60 system operation tests that are due to be done before the end of next year or the end of this year, and we're well on our way to getting that in place. Pam's folks have an approval piece in that, and I think we're at about 30 of those tests complete, and I think all but maybe 10 in some process of development. Some key lessons learned. Success is possible. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of things talking about what things can't happen. I think success is possible on complex DOE capital projects. I mean, there have been some contractual overruns and things, but in a perspective, at least this is my personal opinion, you know, the CD0 on this plant was on the order of almost just under $3 billion, $2.5 billion. And even with the tank major hiccups, even with some redesigns from PC2 to PC3, the TPC on this is going to be below the original CD0 cost. And I think that's very unique in the DOE complex. Not to say we didn't all want to be closer to some of the contractual agreements early on, but I still think that's something that is unusual and worth noting. But just some buzzwords items here is good leadership and personnel at the foundation. I think we have that where we are now. That's a luxury. Plan with realism. That's work the plan. Design with margin. You want to make sure that inevitably construction and procurement vendors are going to have issues. You want to have design margin in there to be able to mine as necessary to move forward. You'll procure with a purpose, construct with vision, and expect perspective and then succeed together as a team. With regards to where we're going, is that we've got a high degree of technical confidence in this plant and its operations and in our interfaces. We're going to maintain the safety, cost, schedule, performance under the current contract and integrated baseline and beat it. Integrate next generation solvent and the high sodium processing to enhance throughput at the right time. Optimize facility operability in general as we develop our commissioning and operational plans. Maintain a lockstep integration with our SR liquid waste partners and DOE, and then look to make a play to minimize life cycle costs as we go forward with some of these options. I did want to note something that here I think that I think we all know, but is worth stating, is that there's a unique success opportunity at SRS, and we think STPF is a keystone to making that happen. I mean, you look at Rocky Flats was closed from a platoon. It was very significant effort, but that was a decontamination. This is some of the toughest, is closing the cycle on the splitting of the atom. This is the liquid radioactive waste entails, and we have the opportunity to bring this to a solution, complete solution. DOESR has established a sound and integrated cleanup strategy. SRR and their predecessors have demonstrated the ability to clean and close tanks, prepare and make glass at high capacity, and safely prepare and transfer the feeds. SRNL has supported success through technology innovation, deployment, and operations optimizations, and I believe Parsons is ready to deliver the technically mature and next high-capacity SWPF that's a keystone to the next major DOEM cleanup success. So, again, I told you I'm long-winded, but I'm to the end. So if there's any questions for Pam or I, we'd be glad to take those, and I thank you very much for your time.
Tom, Pam mentioned these. Operational date was 8/21, back up to 18, one year type of operational testing and so forth. What is the actual best time you know of for when this test will be online?
And Pam cut me off. I'd say that just two things is that there's baseline space and there's current execution space. The baseline for construction complete was December 2016, when the department asked us to then give a baseline, lay out a baseline schedule for commissioning. That then used a starting point of the construction complete baseline, and that went out to the 2020, and then DOE in there, rightfully so, put additional contingency and margin in place as they went to not have to go back to Congress and ask again. They tried to put a complete box, including risk, to it. So I think when Pam talks about the number of 2021, that's a risk-inclusive baseline number. So that's where you are. When you talk about the December 2018 date, that's our target saying if I take the current execution where I'm ahead of the baseline and get done with construction 7 months early and then pull that 30-month, 29-month, whatever it is, commissioning schedule on top of an early completion date and then don't tack on all possible hypothetical risks that you put in the planning case, then that's where you get that target of December or earlier of 2018. And so we are collectively of a project very, very focused on meeting the earliest possible startup date for this and meeting or beating the December 2018 date that's near and dear to Pam and our heart. But from a planning baseline standpoint, just due prudence of the DOE project management processes, you've got risk inclusive baseline numbers that are here. So hopefully that answers your question about
that. Does that include that 1 year you have to?
No. That is for getting it hot started. The 1 year that we 1 year of our operations starts at the date we complete the cold startup testing and operational readiness review.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. Was a reasonable water run state a reasonable cold run state?
Our total commissioning time is about with the new IBR. It's around 30 months, and you've got approximately 20 months of your system operational discrete testing of individual pieces. You've got about 2 months of then you've got on the order of another 12-15 months of integrated water runs and then simulant based cold commissioning integrated runs that then takes you to your operational readiness review. And there's a lot of people, process, procedures, things that happen in parallel with that. I don't want to gloss over, but you've got the individual discrete, in simple terms, you've got the discrete individual system testing that goes on for about half of that 30-month period, and then maybe the other half is your integrated water run testing, and then your integrated salt simulant chemical testing on the second half.
Okay. One of the things that I like was you were talking about adding flushing your vapor lines, and I like that because I was a big design mod to the PBB system and the DWPF. They've just replaced, I guess, the filter in the I-12 building. And the question I have is, does your cross flow filter operations, is that the same?
It's similar, but I can go, and you're technical, so I'll jump through this. They have had some issues with filter flow or filter plugging and so forth. Again, not to be smarmy, because we still have yet to get that spot, but I believe our design has significant differences that minimize that potential. For example, in our testing, we found that about a 13 foot per second axial flow rate through the cross flow filters really scours those sintered metal items to preclude plugging. Just the way that temporary facility was piped up, they really can't get up to 13. You're like just under 13. And he can speak, if I'm misvague, he can correct me, but I believe they're just, as we've worked together on this, but they're just under 13 because of the sizing of the piping and pumps that they're limited to. We really can run up to 15, 16, 17, 18. So we, in our testing, we have vertical filters. They are certainly sintered metal items. There are certain design differences in our plant in terms of these velocities we can get through the filter and so forth, and our cold testing has, which is still with the same exact MST, we haven't been able to foul the filter. So I don't anticipate having that same constraint with regard to filter pluggage and drop-offs of filtrate flow rates that they have had. We also have 350% filters, so we have the luxury of, if we did have that, to be able to clean one while we're switching around. So I think there are design attributes, both in terms of how our pressures and velocities we run at, as well as the capacity and availability of our filters that we've got, that are likely to not have us see those same issues.
The other thing that seemed odd was that at the pilot plant facility, we were able to actually clean in both directions, both from the shell side to the tube side and tube side to the shell side, and that was not the same. That ability to clean from both directions is not in the filter.
No, and the other thing is we have a designated, I'm really getting technical now, but I mean, when we clean our filters, the cleaning solution goes to a separate tank. It doesn't go back to the feed tank. So we can then manage and neutralize that cleaning solution in such a way that it's not just going to kind of get a reflux where you clean and dump the stuff right back your feed tank and send it right back on through. Well, I think you guys don't have the luxury in the pilot plant of having a separate cleaning solution dump tank. Is that right, Keith?
You can't go in both directions? You might look at that if you have the capability of doing that, because that was significant in terms of the, and considering that there have been plugging issues, might be worthwhile to look at that as a possible design mod.
Sure, hey, look.
Right. The other thing is, you mentioned that you were able to get up to 100% contact performance. Do you know why you couldn't before?
It's just a matter of hitting the sweet spot. These things run at 2,200, and you know this, Vince, the 2,200 RPM, it's just getting the right vane height, weir height. There's just a sweet spot you find, and had not had enough time on run to find the sweet spot. The third battery of testing we did, the third testing campaign, really gave us enough time to find where that sweet spot was. It's really as simple as that.
Reproducible?
Yes, and stable and enduring. Well, I was trying to take the long-windedness and put it into a short period, so I'm sorry.
I thought he was going slow.
Tom, you said that Parsons will be operating this for the first year.
Yes.
Are there plans for Parsons to operate it after that first year, or do we know what will happen?
I really wouldn't want to comment on that. I think the department has got to determine what their long-term acquisition strategy is for the operations of both the SWPF and the site. We certainly are interested in being a part of that in some manner, but I think that really would probably be the department's prerogative to answer, if they wanted to even answer it at all.
I think I mentioned that in my comments. We still have an acquisition strategy for beyond the 1 year of operations that we need to execute or put in place.
ask you a question. And I apologize because I don't know the latest date for tank closure, but I think that you said that you thought once SWPF was up and running, it would take 10 to 15 years to process everything in the tank.
That would be our guesstimate, again, based on the bandwidth of potential throughput capacity that we would have.
So it's based on throughput, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So have the schedules for completing the tank, like I thought we were back to 2038 or 2042 or something. Are all the schedules on the site trued up and consistent, or is the tank closure lagging behind? I don't even know how to ask this question. I just get different, when I do the math, I get different dates for different things that are all tied together.
Okay. Well, obviously, when you know our processing of salt waste aren't the only activity, so there's other things that Stewart and SRR need to do to get to tank closure. So, but yes, we are working hard to integrate all of our schedules and again, some of it right now, I'm sure they're only planning on the lower throughputs because, again, for us, it's, I won't say pie in the sky, as Tom said, it's, we have a high confidence that we can achieve it, but I don't think we've put that pen to paper yet.
Yeah, if I can help here, so I'm Stuart McBain, so president of SRR. Where that all comes together is inputs, assumptions that go into the system plan that then give you an output, and that's where everything feeds off of. Small perturbations and inputs, you know, that are real time this year can have some fairly major impacts to the full life cycle of the program. We take inputs that are more in the startup rates and capacities for salt waste processing has come out of the design criteria is what DOE feeds us for input. So it's not trying to take into consideration the much higher throughput that Tom's been talking about. So it's more in the 6 to 7 million gallon.
That would be the 15 year.
Yeah, so it's the higher end. The other thing to remember is there's a lot of back end work to close plants down, flush plants out, to be able to finish the life cycle. So there's quite a bit of time on the back end that is taken up by that. So, and of course, that could change pretty dramatically based on this.
So it's not a matter of screwing up the various schedules or capacity to work. It's more a matter of assumptions that you use to come up with your estimates.
The system plant does integrate the entire liquid waste program output, and so that's where everything's all collected together, but it just makes a difference how you feed them.
But doesn't include anything by the state or the EPA or anything in terms of approval of each of the phases. It just worries that integrate into your overall timeline. In other words, yes, instantaneous closure acceptance.
Well, I don't really have any discrete approvals that I need from the state. Stewart has most of those to get to the milestones and then the tank closure, like Shelley mentioned. So
yeah,
they come on the liquid waste program side of the house.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
So, by way of introducing Stewart McBain, SRR, when I heard that salt waste processing had the potential for coming online sooner than they had expected, I got worried that the feed might not be ready, but basically because of funding things. So what I want to hear is, what I want the council to hear is how confident we are that we have enough money to get ready to do this when this plant is ready.
And what do we need to do to make that happen?
So I saw you in a meeting, a week or two ago, and you tipped me off to make sure I had the right stuff in the presentation. So once again, I'm Stuart McBain. I'm the president and project manager for Savannah River Remediation, and we've currently got the operating contract for what we call the base program of the liquid waste program for the Department of Energy. We call it BASE because Parsons clearly has this other piece, and I'll go through what the BASE program includes. And so just a little bit of an update here. One of the nice features of the liquid waste program at Savannah River is it is
a fully integrated closed loop flow sheet. So we've got the answers from start to finish. And so I think that's a big plus for this site to be able to have the fully integrated capability to treat all the various waste.